Hey, we all love to eat. Who doesn't? But we do ever think what happens behind the kitchen door? How'd that food get there? How'd that restaurant get there? And what's happening in cooking in our own community here? Those are some of the questions we ponder on this show with our famous Chef Pascal.
Hello, Paul. How are you doing?
I'm doing good here. You know, one of the things that always struck me as we started this show, I thought you were going to just have fancy French restaurants like your former place. And you've had some, Knife Pleat, Sun Loves in here. But you keep talking about the future of food is...
Yeah, why should I create my own competition?
That's right, exactly. Yeah. So maybe that's it. But you're saying that really today, because you teach over at Saddleback's Culinary Institute, the future of many of restaurants and food is smaller locations, probably ethnic locations, and somebody like we have with us here today.
Yes, and because I'm very curious about ethnic cuisine, and we're very... grateful here in Orange County to have every type, I'm sure, of ethnic cuisine.
Indian, Philippine, Indian, Thai, Iranian, Thai.
Peruvian. You
know? Right, Peruvian, yeah.
So, and some French.
And some French.
And some American, because there is an American cuisine. A lot of people say there's no American cuisine.
Yeah, that's true.
So, today we are here with... can I call you chef, Alfonso?
No, chef. I hope I was a chef, and I'm not a chef. But so, thank you.
Let's get you to move your mic over a little bit in front of you. Chef's mic.
So,
there you go.
Chef Alfonso Corona and his wife, Carrie, they opened up the first restaurant on your own, 40-some years ago, or somebody else I did before?
Well, 45 years ago, my parents started, they opened the first restaurant, and after about 18 years of operating that restaurant, that's when my dad passed away, and me and my wife took over that location, then we started.
Which is where?
Yeah, where was that?
It's in Santa Ana. That was in 1981, in the city of Santa Ana, that's when we opened.
On First Street?
On First Street, yes. Yeah. Yep. It was Grand and Second Street, just a block away from First, and that's the one that was opened in 1981.
The original.
Yes, exactly, the original, yeah. And I was there when I was 4 or 5 years old with my parents at the restaurant.
So you're not a chef, but you've been raised on food, on the kitchen, you know?
Yes.
So you spent a lot of time in the kitchen with your dad, correct?
Yes, exactly, yes. I spent a lot of time in the kitchen with my dad, and then... without my dad, when he would send me and help out at our different places that we had, because he also had some restaurants in Mexico as well.
Oh, wow.
And not only chicken, but over there he had some seafood restaurants and some international restaurant as well.
How was it to work with your dad? Was he a tough guy?
Oh, yeah. He was a tough guy. It's hard. It's hard. I didn't like it, obviously, when at that age. But I really learned a lot, and I think that's one of the best things that could happen to me when you're a kid.
That's the best way to remember. And, you know, and I tell you once, but I won't tell you twice.
Yeah, so, exactly.
And then I want to just interject. So you took that, and he passed away, and you took it over.
Exactly.
And ran it. Why didn't... It could have stayed there. There's a million mom-and-pop, one-off restaurants around, particularly in places like Santa Ana or Anaheim or Little Saigon or all these places where the ethnic communities gather. You took it to another level.
Yes. Well, since when I was a kid, we always had these talks with my dad or in the dinner table, because in our case, at dinner or when we would get to it, we would talk about business. It was okay, and we all loved it. Yeah. We would talk about our own business and plans and whatever he and my mom wanted to do, and or what I like to do as well. And I always had the idea to grow our company and have a at that time I would say a couple thousand restaurants.
So he planted a seed in you.
Yes,
and that seed keep on growing. And now you have a little chain. You
know? Yep, exactly.
And how many of these have you got, or are you in the process of opening more of these? Let's give the name of it.
El Pollo Norteño. Right. That's the name of our restaurants. And yes, we opened in 1981. Right now we have six locations, six restaurants open, and two in the process.
Why Norteño? Because is it northern Mexican cuisine more
exactly.
like yours?
Correct. Yes, it's the style of how we cook chicken. It's from the northern part of Mexico, like between Sinaloa and Sonora states.
Okay.
Those are that's how they came up with the name.
And how did they cook chicken there? And I don't know about regional cuisine in Mexico.
We need to know. We will tell the audience. How do they cook the chicken?
Yeah,
exactly. At the restaurant.
Yes.
Very specific. And there's a good reason for that. So you took it 18 years ago, and so you say you had a plan to have a
I took it 28 years ago. He had it for 18, and then us, it's been already 28 years ago when we took over, yeah.
And you have another one coming up soon, no?
Two more. We have Westminster and also Costa Mesa. Those hopefully are coming up in the next month or two.
Six current, two more. That'll give you eight. That's exactly. A pretty nice little chain going there.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Yes.
You want a franchise?
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking in my backhand. Any plans, any thoughts, any ideas of that, of taking
yes.
it? Regional,
yes.
nationwide?
It's a great concept.
Thank you, yes. We do have plans. We actually already got approved by the state of California, and then we also applied in Texas. Nevada and Arizona to start selling franchises.
Because, Chef's big friends with not just Wingland, but his brother, mm-hmm. Who and how they took that from just a place over in Costa Mesa to how many they've got now, 100 or something. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And it's a great concept, yes.
And so your dad, when he first opened the restaurant, was he always also focusing more on chicken than the rest of the protein?
Yes, it was. And how this is in Mexico, and I imagine some other countries, you only specialize in one thing. So whoever sells grilled chicken, it's only grilled chicken. Whoever sells birria, it's only birria. The carnitas guy only prepares carnitas. The carne asada tacos, only carne asada tacos. So
I didn't know that. I assumed if I went to Mexico, they'd all have all of it.
Well, that's the American way of Mexican restaurant.
Yes, exactly. That's a newer kind. Yeah, but no, before it's over there, it's still a lot of places. Do you only specialize in one or two things at the most. So when we got here, we started selling only chicken. But then we learned
The demand.
Exactly. The demand and the demographics as well.
Sure.
And everything that people was more used to different things. Even in Mexico, when we would sell chicken, we didn't prepare beans. Yeah. It was only rice,
beans. I thought it's like peanut butter and jelly. You have to have both. Yeah,
not with chicken at the beginning. Yeah. Or over there, it was only chicken, rice, and salsa and tortillas. Yeah. That was it.
Also, you had to expand your menu because we can go over the menu later. Because you sell a lot to take out.
Yep,
a lot. You could call it catering, but it's a lot of take out. And people, when they go online to place their order, they want to have a choice. You know?
Yes, exactly. Yes, no, that's our biggest business, part of the business. 70% of our sales are to go. So now we tend to look for smaller locations.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, they're easier to run and more cost-effective for us as well. Rent, obviously, because you're paying per square feet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easier on us. Yeah, also, the rent for the locations.
And is that the future of dining? Chefs and I talk about this all the time. The days of having 100 seats and turn it over three times a day may be gone. It may be that you have to do other things and cater.
Well, you have to cut on dining room staff, service, you know.
Right.
And if you cut on staff, it's like half of your payroll already saved,
right.
and then you have a lower square footage, and then the money come in the window and go out, boom.
Exactly,
you can put up more product. In a smaller space.
And
I think it meets the. I look at my own son-in-law and daughter. My daughter, they're in their early 30s. They make money. But their idea of dining is going to Uber Eats, is going...
Well, Uber Eats, DoorDash, all this DoorDash, work. Exactly. Yeah. Even though you have to give your percentage back.
Right.
But still, because of the cut of the labor, and you can control your preparation. Because if you sit in your restaurant and wait for the customer to come in, you have no idea what's going to happen. It's going to be a good day, a good night. So, but these online orders really help, especially in your type of cuisine, which is great cuisine, but still casual dining.
Yes, exactly. It's fast casual. You're completely right. And the thing is that, let's say, with the restaurants before, bigger restaurants, that you obviously you want to give them a better service and everything. When you need to cut down on labor, how can you give them better service? It's really hard.
Yeah.
Then service starts hurting on your business.
Well, I have to say, I went there yesterday, and there was no server in the day room, but the counter service was great. Very attentive, very quick, very asked the right question. So why dealing with a server to just show up for tips when you can have...
Did Chef just say that? Why deal with a server who just shows up for tips? Oh, my goodness. That's the way many of us feel about our servers today.
I really lose half of my audience.
But I can't believe he said that. Oh, my goodness.
Well, that's the truth. You know? But somebody who is really take your order and pack it and communicate with the kitchen, it's a whole closed circle, I think.
Yes.
It really works.
Exactly, yes. And that's one of the things that we try to focus a lot. It's in the service, even though it's fast casual, and a lot of times people don't expect much of good service.
It's not fast food.
No, it's not. Or it's
what's the difference between fast food and fast casual?
Well,
I hear both of those terms all the time. I think I know, but you tell me, you guys, what's the difference?
Well, for me, fast casual, it has a nice menu with variety and more complexity and...
probably not pre-made.
Not pre-made, yeah. And you can combine, you can do things. Fast food is just, boom, that's it. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
It's an assembly line of pre-made
stuff.
Especially
now you look on the tablet
kiosk,
and boom,
boom,
kiosk. You know?
Yep.
So things change, because still, you still run it like a classic restaurant.
Yes, classical. I think so. Yes, and you're right.
You have a kitchen crew, they make things to order. I saw the guy at the assembling table.
Somebody's prepping it and everything.
Making the burritos and the quesadilla, the whole thing, you know.
Yes.
It's great.
Completely right. And a good friend of mine would say that we have gourmet food, just serve fast.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily fast food, because you're right. It's not pre-assembled. It's not nothing that we bring already cooked and then we'll just reheat it here, like it happens with a lot of fast food places. We make everything in-house and we prepare everything.
And is this the place to talk about how he makes it? Because you do something different.
Exactly. It's part of my... pre-response before.
Oh, okay. All right.
Before he answers it, I'm going to ask, how do you make your restaurant standing out? Because you have competition.
Yes.
Grilled chicken restaurant, Mexican.
Up and down the block.
Yes. All type of different level, corporate or local. So how do you stand out from that?
Okay, so... We specialize in grilled chicken, but our specialty is we cook with mesquite charcoal. So we still cook as we did in Mexico, and we still cook how a lot of places cook in Sinaloa and Sonora as well, and it's with mesquite charcoal.
Okay.
So
Like that would be slower, though.
Well, you know what?
I could crank it out faster in an oven.
You can,
of course.
Yeah, you're a blower.
It's going to take you 25 minutes just to turn on the, to light up the charcoal.
once it's on, you know, just... We feel it.
Exactly. In our case, we turn it on, we light it up at 8:30 a.m. and we keep it on until 7:30, 8 p.m. So, but that's what makes us different. That's how we try to stand apart or to have a difference from our competition.
Yeah.
We cook with mesquite charcoal. It's slower. It's more obviously more like a kind of a well, it's more manual labor.
You got to pay attention to it. You got to turn it and move it and stuff.
You got to turn it. You got to be careful of how the heat. And
it's almost like outdoor cooking in the kitchen.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And then in our case, now that you say outdoor cooking, the same way we cook it inside the restaurant, we can just pull a grill out on a weekend and then cook outside or go and cook at a home or at a company.
So you can do catering and other things.
Oh, we do that a lot.
Yeah, grill, you can bring some people's home.
Yeah, yeah.
Ooh,
yeah.
I like
on our catering, there's a lot of people that would hire us to come and grill on site.
That's wonderful. We do
for a lot of companies as well, for corporate events. That's one of the things that we push a lot and try to do a lot of catering, and that has helped a lot of our business.
I'm going to add something to what makes your food different and standing out from other Mexican chicken grill. Mm. You serve chicken on the bone.
Mm. Correct.
It's amazing. Big, big difference. First you marinate it. You have a great marinate. Mm-hmm. You don't give us all your secrets, right?
No. I know. I would.
He wouldn't anyway. But we'll laugh.
The skin is crispy, everything. And so this is why your chicken is standing up from other grill Mexican chicken place.
Correct. I think so. Obviously, I'm in love with my brand, but cooking it with mesquite charcoal, it gives it obviously a distinctive flavor, a little more of on a smoky side. As well, we're able to, because we're cooking all the time, we're able to prepare it on the way that you want it. Maybe you like it more on a juicy side. Maybe you like it more well done. That's something that we can do.
So you can customize a little bit. I can say I want it to this way or that way. It's not just one way. It's not
exactly
the way.
And that's also the difference from fast food. That on fast food, you can't really ask for whatever you want.
No, I can't go to McDonald's and say I want a rare hamburger or something.
Yes,
exactly. And the skin is crispy.
Yes.
You almost don't need a tortilla. The skin can be used as a tortilla.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Now, do you source this differently, or is it still – because I'm assuming all this stuff comes – frozen or cut up or something here. You're not cutting up the chickens yourself.
I don't think
yourself.
So. The chicken is fresh.
No, it's fresh and we cut it. So
you
we,
do?
Yeah,
wow, okay.
Yeah. We get our chicken or our wogs. We get them in twice a week to all of our restaurants. We cut them. We put them in ice and then inside the walk-in cooler. Then we'll marinate them and then pull them out to cook.
Because Chef was talking about this, that more and more, even fine dining, they're buying portioned. They think that somehow it's all cut and it's all
frozen.
That's
why they don't make money.
Exactly.
And they have to charge more.
Yes.
Yeah. And so your prices are reasonable because you do everything in-house. So
correct.
It's very important.
Exactly.
And do you find a way to use everything? Do you make stocks out of it? Do you make soups out of it? Do you do other things with the bones?
We do caldo de pollo as well at all of our restaurants. And but you're right, Chef, that labor cuts a lot. We save a lot on obviously on cost because we're the ones cutting our processing our chicken instead of even having it already cut. We've tried that because of workers' comp issues, accidents before because obviously there's knives involved and
cut,
all that.
So it's cheaper. They think it's cheaper just to get it pre-portioned. And
so no knife, no corona.
Right, exactly. But in our case now, we keep processing and cutting our chickens at locations, at each location every week. So
and
that's
I
how
have
we
to
keep.
Say, Paul, also, one of my favorite things that stand out to me when I place my order, you can decide if you want just dark meat.
What?
For an extra dollar, I think.
Yes.
You can say, all I want is dark meat.
Yep.
Exactly. I'm not too much of a white meat, chicken white meat either. So if I can avoid dark meat, well, that's it.
Exactly. I love dark meat too. So because it's juicier, and in my case, I prefer it.
And dark meat on the bone is even better.
Exactly. And that's one of the things that obviously it's different when you're cooking it when it's bone in. Obviously, it's much. Yeah. It's going to take 50 minutes minimum to cook it instead of maybe 15 minutes when it's boneless chicken.
Yeah.
But
but how do you then get it to be moist? That's my thing. It's like outdoor grilling. Mm-hmm. It can be cooked on the outside and raw on the inside. Or to get it done to the inside, then it gets so dry on the outside because you cooked it so long to get it to cook all the way through. As opposed to, again, Chef had some people on. There's all sorts of machinery now that'll do this stuff. What's the one I'm thinking of? The air fryers and other sorts of things quickly, and it'll cut through all this. It'll cut the time, and
slow
it'll make it more
cooking and sous vide.
Sous vide, yes, exactly. No, in our case, well, we cook with open flame, but in our case, the difference, it's the depth of the grill. How close you have the wood, the charcoal.
You can adjust it too, huh?
No, in our case, we don't adjust it. We only have it at once because that's the only thing we cooked, only chicken.
Okay.
So it's deeper. It's not as shallow as like when you're only cooking steaks.
Okay.
That's one. And then also, in our case that I was explaining, Chef, yesterday, it's that our charcoal, we needed to be already more on the red and white side, not still black with flames, because if you're cooking it like over the flames, then you're going to burn it on the outside, and it's going to be on the
skin
inside.
Is burnt.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So that's really for show and for the commercials and for the for the pictures, but you can't really cook chicken like that with flames.
No.
If you have flames, you're going to burn it. You're not going to be able to have a good product.
I took some pictures. If people want to see more of the picture, I took some and post them on Facebook.
Great,
yesterday, so we can see that, and I like your logo. Tell me a little bit about your logo.
Of course, perfect. So we had a logo that my parents had started in, obviously in 81. When we started changing everything, all our branding, when we took over in 99, we wanted to give it a fresh look, also make it more like a more receptive also for kids as well. And
something that said it was more than just a mom-and-pop one-off restaurant here.
Yes, exactly. Yes, we started to do a lot of those changes with our menus, with our logo, the name. I'm sorry, not the name, but lettering. The chicken with a pitchfork, and he's on like a cowboy suit.
You look like a happy chicken. Huh?
Yeah, he's a happy, like the sheriff of the town.
And does he have a name? He or she have a name to this chicken?
Right now, he's only El Pollo Norteño. He's a northern guy, the northern chicken.
Northern guy.
Yeah.
Yes. I think he should be Chef Pascal.
Yeah,
or however you say Pascal in Espanol.
Pascual.
Pascual.
Pascual, there you go.
Yes. Thank you. Yes, and when they designed also our logo, the chicken, we wanted to look happy. We wanted to look strong and healthy, but we also wanted to give it kind of a resemblance.
In Orange County, because we're privileged to have a very diverse community.
Yes,
I can take you to a million little pho restaurants over in Little Saigon. That there's one. Or I can take you to a million little Korean barbecue places, that there's one. Or we can go up and down Anaheim and Little Arabia, and I can take you to a falafel place or something where there's one. I can't take it to many that have taken it to another level, that have a brand that, and because, not just because of the economics of doing it or the desire to do it. It's complicated. How do you cook as good in number two and number three as you do in number one? How do you have the same quality as you go across?
Yeah, do you have a team? When you open a new restaurant, you have a team that's going to go and train the new crew.
But, well, what we do is we train the cooks at the current locations, and we take the experienced people to the new ones. Mm-hmm. And then we have it's like a hybrid. So we have experienced cooks and new ones at both places, at the new location and also at the current locations, because once I did that mistake of starting with new people at a new location, that was maybe at my
first one's great, new one's not so great.
Exactly.
Or not the same.
And do you have one key chef that really is going kind of be the director of the other chef?
No, not really. We do have like five great cooks that they're the backbone of our company, but there's not only one single one of them. So with them, we transfer their experience and their knowledge to the rest of the team. They usually always stay at their location, the one that they're in charge of. But one of the things that we also do to try to keep it more consistent and also uniform the flavors, there's a lot of preparation that gets done at all of our locations, but we specialize. One location will prepare maybe these two salsas, the two tomatillos, red and green.
The tomatillo, amazing.
Yes,
the green one is cilantro tomatillo. It's very flavorful, but not too much kick.
Correct.
But
one of them you said has kind of a kick to it here.
Yeah, the red, the red one.
Like the pico de gallo one, the tomato one. Yes. And that gets prepared at another location. Then our pickled carrots are another one, the pickled onions at other locations. So what we do, it's because in my...
Because you need to do bulk.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And in my location, in my business right now, for it to work, we can't have a commissary right now. We don't have the size for a commissary. So what we do, we'll specialize in each location to prepare everything for all the company.
And so then, one place makes the tomatillo sauce or something. Whatever.
And is somebody do a round?
Twice a week we have a refrigerated trucks. Well, we deliver to all of our locations.
So
we pick
great,
up and delivery.
Great system.
Yes, for now it's been.
You may want to do what Chef is saying though, because we had a culinary dropout in here. Mm-hmm. Another interesting. They opened one up in Orange, and they I forgot how many now, but they got 10, 20 of these things. They got quite a number of them around the country, and they try and do college towns like Orange and Chapman College, and it's a hip kind of cool. It is a full restaurant, but it's kind of fun American cuisine and stuff, a mixture of things. What struck me was, not just when I ate there, but when they came and talked about it, was they have a team that goes from state to state to open this thing.
Yeah.
And that's all they do is open new restaurants. Okay. So they have, so from the word go, they're not just training the staff, they're delivering the service and the product.
Because they have the specifics on their recipes and things like that.
Absolutely. And so, we had that chef on
and then they have a system. They can develop a system for each location.
Right.
And any of your staff been there for very long time?
Yes. 20, 30 years,
Not up to 30 years, but we do have a couple employees that they've been there, one for 18 years, the other one for, I think, 21 years now. We do have a lot of them that they've been for 8 and 10 years working with us. We have great, great staff.
And how do you do that? And what I'm still going to think of as fast or fast casual, I think there'd be fast turnover at that level, because this maybe isn't their career. This is something they're passing through their kids or their.
This is their career.
In our case, it's more that we need someone that it's really gonna need this
and
line
when
of work.
And when they trust the employer, they want stability, because usually they have a family to raise. They live locally, and so you are their life support.
Yes,
no problem.
And they'll bring sometimes, obviously, maybe they'll bring in maybe later their kids to work with us.
Interesting.
For them, maybe it's not going to be a forever job. I understand that. But
we had before you here on the Hispanic Chamber show, Charles Antis, who has the big roofing company, and he gives away a lot.
Same
thing. And he says he has a higher retention rate because he treats these people as family and a career. This isn't just a job.
So they want that stability. I lost my track.
All right, so you got 6 of them now, 8. Is this going to be 800 of them? Is this going to be... And I'll tell you another fascinating... We haven't had them on Chef Show. We had them somewhere else. There's a little chain. It started in Guatemala. I got their logo. They came out on some other show here. And they've now got like hundreds of these things around in Guatemala starting, and then now across the country, they have a couple of them in the U.S. here. So how they grew similarly was kind of a family-owned operation to a kind of handful of them to regional. I don't know what the big leap was, how they started going everywhere. That's got to be, do you have to bring in franchise consultants and hire different people
You become corporate.
Yeah. Yes.
And then do you buy the land or are you just renting the stuff? Wing Lamb talks about it. I think they own the land, don't they, on all the ones that they, or they own the stores?
Which one?
Yahoo Fish Taco? They don't own land.
Most of them are rent on lease.
Yes, on the ones on the shopping centers.
Yeah.
But the idea is hopefully, like in our case, the two of our 6 open locations, we own the properties on those two. They're freestanding. A lot of times we don't have that same option to go in a market and find the...
Because then you can control your rents. You can do all sorts of other stuff. And now you got and the land goes up and you've got added value on your books and everything here.
That's the owner's job, to make sure we have a great lease.
Yeah.
When you learn your mistakes when you sign the first lease.
That's the truth. Isn't that the truth?
Or after 4 leases, you're still learning about your mistakes. Yes.
You learn how to read between the lines.
Yes.
One thing strikes me. Mm-hmm. you first opened, or your dad, a Mexican restaurant in the Mexican community. And
obvious place
what
to
was
start.
He thinking? You know, the people can eat Hispanic cuisine at home. And
Well, he was thinking, and obviously the customer base that you have, mm-hmm. because that's something that it's not new to everyone, but at the same time, there wasn't chicken restaurants at that time. There wasn't that many. And Santa Ana, it's been our home, obviously, for 45 years. We have two restaurants in Santa Ana. And it's hard to have a Mexican restaurant to strive in Santa Ana, obviously, because everyone knows about good Mexican food in Santa Ana. Everything's authentic in Santa Ana. They'll prepare their own food at home, obviously. Mm-hmm. And
my Hispanic son-in-law would tell you that's the same thing. He was raised in Santa Ana. He won't go to most places.
No, because they say, oh, I can do that at home.
Or my mom. Yep. Nobody can do better than my mom.
Yeah. Right. But if you stand out. So your dad, 3 years ago, was ahead of the time because he developed a concept, so keep on business. And I have to say, when I was there yesterday, the guests that were there, or take coffee, they were all Hispanic.
Correct.
And it's a good sign. When I go to a...
authentic, then, real. Authentic. They appreciate it. Yeah.
And so, you know, when I go to an Asian restaurant, how can I look around, say, who's dying here? If I see a lot of Asian clients there, say, there must be a good place.
You know? Of course. Yes, you're right. You're completely right. Or if you even see the employees eating there, then that's another good sign.
Now, I thought you were going to go in a different direction when you started the question. I thought you were going to say, how then do you take it to Westminster? To a Vietnamese community.
Yeah, good
That's
point.
Something that we talked about yesterday with Chef, and that's what I was telling him that yesterday when we had a few minutes talking, that now we started going and opening, let's say, Lake Forest. Our Lake Forest location does pretty well. It's different demographics, but it's great. A lot of customers, they appreciate a lot that we're there because there's not a lot of authentic Mexican food in the cities, but I think Mexican food has grown a lot everywhere, and there's a lot of people that come fond to Mexican food. I think the Mexican food right now, it's like Italian food was maybe 30 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That it's growing so strong,
it's a good comparison,
so big.
And more authentic.
Yes. And now you see it everywhere in the world. You'll go to a small town, I don't know, in Italy, and in Spain, in Portugal, and you'll see places that prepare burritos or tacos as well. Because you start seeing Mexican food, and now people recognize.
Even a supermarket in France, I've seen some, some tortillas. You know,
yes, you're completely
salsa,
right.
Some salsa. Yeah.
I have a really good friend that he imports salsa, and he lives in France. He has an importing company. He sells salsa and tortillas and tostadas.
So I think you should license one of these to Chef Pascal, and he should take it to his little village in Normandy.
I'm good with that.
That would be awesome. Yeah. As a fact, when I go and visit Normandy, I'll try to get things there and prepare some chicken there and send you some pictures and videos.
Sure.
We can do it in Normandy,
and
too.
And then you can have local farm chicken. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I was going to say, then does it require local ingredients? Because that's been what's limited In-N-Out. They feel they have to have control over the product, so they have to warehouse it and they ship it every day or every other day or something to their stores. Mm-hmm. They don't just take local produce and try and adapt it.
Well, yeah, In-N-Out's a different philosophy. In-N-Out has been done one way like this, 50 years ago?
Yeah. And they literally had that same book where they drew up the original recipe.
Stick to the book. You know?
Exactly. Right. It's a different animal, and it's a nice animal they have. But you're right. In their case, there's not much flexibility.
Right. So they struggle to grow.
Talking about flexibility, all right. There are also, besides chicken, what's the other people's favorite here?
You mean there's something at El Pollo Norteño other than pollo?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, we sell a lot of carne asada, carnitas. We do al pastor and birria. So we have five proteins, chicken, asada, pastor, carnitas, and birria. And from those five proteins, that's we'll prepare you a bowl like the ones that I brought. a plate.
Hold up one of them. What do we got? We got two choices. You can get it like in a bowl, which I always picture is more like Asian food or something, or
right.
or pokey or something.
Bowl is very popular right now.
Exactly.
Real popular right now.
Yes. It's
the protein on top of something like rice or something.
So this, right. This is a chicken breast, huh?
Yes, exactly. Right. It's a chicken breast over a bit of rice, charro beans, and then
tilt it up towards the camera so they can see it. Yeah.
What I like is your grilled jalapenos.
Oh, they're great. The grilled jalapenos.
Oh, man.
Yes.
That's so good.
They're great.
Or the tradition, which I think was a box, open that up. So you've got real chicken on bone in there.
On this one, we have.
And I would picture, that's what I would picture a takeout if I go to a Mexican restaurant. It's probably beans in there and tortillas and everything here. And underneath, you got a real chicken.
We can take it out.
I think you got to lift it up and hold it up because we don't have a camera looking down. Yeah. See if we can tilt that a little bit.
Look at that.
Yeah, that's a meal, folks. That's looking good. That's not just a plop of chicken and some beans there.
Oh, no. Exactly. That's a meal. So we'll prepare, with those proteins, we'll prepare a bowl or a plate or the tacos, burritos, quesadillas, and nachos. So all those plates or different kind of options, we'll prepare them with five proteins.
And your rice is really good, too.
Thank you. We make our own rice, and that's one of the things as well that we'll prepare at one of the locations. The base for the rice gets prepared in one location for all the restaurants, and we'll prepare the rice and the beans. We'll boil them at each location. It's nothing that we'll get them prepared and then just reheat them. No.
Why is it I go to so many Mexican restaurants, even nice ones, and the rice is like rock.
Yeah,
it's dried. It's stale. It's old. It's been sitting in a bucket or whatever, a bowl forever. When they bring it out, it's like crack your tooth on it or something.
Not
like
this.
No.
It's not sticky.
It's fluffy. It's not sticky. It's nice. Yeah, yes, you're right. Yeah. Thank you. I'm glad you noticed.
Yes.
Thank you.
Oh, he's into this stuff. Now, when did protein? That's the first time I've heard anybody describe Mexican food as different proteins, meaning different. Animals here, right? Usually they say it's chicken, it's beef, it's whatever. That's the big buzzword. If you go over here to your friends over here that have Urban Ranch over near here, they have a protein station, and you pick your protein and then you put it on
your sides
or rice or something, or all these pokey restaurants. Again, you pick the protein, then you put it on the rice or the bowl or something. When did that become the big? We never did that as a kid. Nobody used to pick your protein.
Well, because people start to learn how to balance their weekly eating.
Mm.
So. And like we say in our culture, you got to have seafood or fish once a week. I mean, we've been raised like that.
Yeah.
So
I did because I was Catholic, so we had to have seafood.
And then, you know, on Sunday you have chicken, and one day you have, so you change protein for the week. But
I never heard it called protein, and I've never heard Mexican restaurant tour come in and say, I've got different proteins.
No, I think this started maybe about 10 years ago, people started noticing, or not noticing, but like learning more and being careful of what they eat and how much
they
need in protein now on their diet, because
also,
before they didn't really.
Your clientele get more educated because before nobody knew what al pastor was.
Yes,
you know?
Exactly. You're right.
And you know, thing of asada, well, it was grilled beef, you know, but you know. But birria, this is new.
Let's talk about that one, because birria is one I don't think I've ever even tried. The idea of eating a goat somehow makes me, like some people are, about octopus. I don't know if I could.
Yeah, but it's a perfect meat to stew, slow cooking.
Right. Is it? Okay, and people say that it can get real gamey or chewy or stringy.
My dad used to raise goat.
Uh-huh.
And
he'd slaughter them, and you'd eat them?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
So birria, you can make it the original. Right, I think it's made with goat. And then you can
get you a little closer to the mic. I know you're trying.
You can do it with beef as well. In our case, we prepare with beef, and because of to have it available at any time.
Goat is very strong.
Goat is really strong, and then also if you don't take care of the temperature, if it gets a little like on your taco, if it gets a little cold after 5 minutes, then you start feeling the fat.
No, also there's not much goat farm.
Yes.
So,
Who's raising goats around here to eat?
And it's really expensive, and it's too expensive as well, the goat. Mm-hmm. So in our case, we use beef, and there's a lot of birria places that have turned into.
So are Americans starting to understand, or even people who were raised, who are from another country but lived here. Is that becoming more popular? Are they trying it? Are they beginning? Because I would never, you don't go to, my daughter dies. My daughter's from Mexico. I raised her, we adopted her from an orphanage. And she's always railing on me, Dad, the stuff you eat isn't even Mexican food. It's Taco Bell. So who told you this is Mexican food?
Exactly.
You mean you never have any cabeza?
Yes. And she's always trying to tell me this stuff, and I'm like, I don't know. But, you know, we adopted her, she was like 10, so she grew up in Michoacan. And to her, she's horrified when she came here that what we think, what I think of as Mexican food is, you know, fake food. It's like pizza is to Italians or something. This isn't Italian food.
Yeah. But once you try this, then you say,
I hope we're going to do that soon. Like here.
But I think there's a lot of people that now they're learning about, obviously, carnitas since before, but with birria, it has grown a lot.
Carne asada, all my friends have kind of made that leap.
Everyone knows about carnitas as well,
It's one of the French heritage for the Mexican
French countries. Heritage? Yeah, come on. You're always trying to make everything sound French here.
It shows the culture. It changed the way to cook it. Yep. It's a slow cooking, so it keeps the meat very tender.
Is the key to carne asada, slow cooking.
And cooking is non fat, it's non juice.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah. It's cooked with lard. And a lot of places I know that they don't want, they'll say that they'll boil it in water, but that's not carnitas.
No.
Really, it
they
has
boil
to be
in
cooked
water is dry.
Lard. Yes, exactly. And the flavor that it brings, everything that you can get from.
Is there a similarity between, I mean, they're next to each other, France and Spain, but they're. I think of them as not just different languages, but totally different cultures, even though they're both European. They're both next to each other. They've fought a million wars. They fought beside each other a million times. Their border is there a similarity to Mexican food and French food? I guess I never thought about that.
I would say yes. Southern France, especially on the Basque country, very similar to Mexican cuisine.
Chef is a part Basque or mostly Basque here.
And Northern, Spanish cuisine, original Spanish cuisine. Look at the rice. You make great paella in Spain.
That's true,
You make great rice in Mexico.
Yes, the rice. I think you're right. Now that you're saying,
chorizo.
I think that the carnitas we were learning from the French cuisine.
Chorizo in Spain. Chorizo in
When I picture French food, like you made it Pascal's for 100 years, I picture lots of sauces, and I picture it to be... and to be savory and sweet, so you have a lot of pastries and stuff like that. I don't picture it to be hot. Is French food hot? Why is Spanish food, which has ascended, turned into Mexican food, or did that change when it came here to the New World?
You mean it's spicy?
Yeah.
No, the French...
Right, spicy, yeah.
like moderation spice. Very moderate. Mm-hmm. But
I don't think a hot sauce and spice in French food, yeah.
Well, we have some special peppers, like espolette or some type of paprika, or cayenne, because you brought
that's from
outside of France.
A colony.
Colonies.
Yeah.
Right. But, you know...
Or did Spanish food evolve when it came to the New World and turned into Mexican food and South American food? Did it change and pick up local peppers and flavors here, I wonder? I don't know the history of the cuisine.
Yeah, I think... The salsas are really pretty much the same here than in Mexico.
But what about Spain? If I went to Spain, do they have salsas and all that stuff here?
No, it's mostly olive oil.
Exactly.
A little bit of grilled peppers, tomatillo.
So this is really Mexican food, not Spanish. Spanish
totally.
But using the chilies and all that, I think it grew up much more when it came to America.
Right.
Yeah. But the especially the red salsa, it's a little bit Spanish. You know, we do sofritos. You know, we do a grill. We shred tomato on the season. We just shred it like a cheese grater.
Yeah. So Chef Pascal's always told me that for fine dining, you study French first. French is the basis or has become the modern basis for most fine dining. And he has people in here who are Vietnamese or other things that, I may make Asian food, but the sauces and the basic approach to...
So the salsa, for me, in relationship with Mexican cuisine, for me... It's like a dressing.
Right.
You know, it gives you extra seasoning, your extra spice, And
you usually put it on top of everything.
And you put it on top, that's true.
So instead of using olive oil, we use a salsa.
Interesting.
And that's why I did.
I never thought of it as a dressing. Yeah.
You grab a piece of tortilla. You know, tortilla is not made to fill up and eat like this. Tortilla is a scoop.
Dip and scoop.
You break a piece.
Right.
And then you grab a piece of chicken and you put a little salsa on top and some beans. Maybe.
Well, can I make a suggestion? Let's do that right now.
Okay.
Yeah. Which one am I going to try? Which one do you want to try, Chef? Which one do you want to taste?
I want to try some other grilled chicken.
All right, I'll pass the bowl over here, then I'll taste the bowl.
Yeah.
The bowl is kind of, I'm a middle class American here. That's my kind of food. And I do like spicy. So I'll take whatever is the
right. Really. Try the jalapeno.
The grilled jalapeno, bro. I'll give you some of the red
jalapeno. I'll go with that. I've learned to, when I first came to California, ketchup was spicy. You know, I couldn't have anything. And now I can't get enough of it. All right, so I'm doing what? This is just chicken. This is northern chicken that's been grilled on a mesquite.
Exactly.
That's, and you've got some kind of a traditional kind of, what do I call this? A salsa with...
The pico de gallo.
Pico de gallo, right.
Pico de gallo, yeah. The charro beans. That it's whole beans with chorizo,
and
beef, chorizo
lime
vegetables.
Lime on it here because I like lime.
Yeah.
And then and this has been... Why has it kind of got a yellow color to it?
Because of the marinade, exactly. Mm. Because of the marinade. And
well, first thing, the rice is really good. It's got a lot of onion and other stuff in it. Or is that the pico de gallo? I'm hitting some of that.
No, but it has some onions and a lot of garlic as well.
So for me, this is a fork.
That's a fork for you.
There's a fork exactly. On the spoon. Yeah, yeah. Thing.
Mm. Yes.
And
that's
amazingly moist for something that was cooked over flame.
Look at that.
I wouldn't think it would be that moist. How do you keep it that moist? Because flame means dry. At least in my barbecue world, everything I have ever had on a flame is dry.
So the distance between the heat and the chicken, and obviously not trying not to go over those 45, 50 minutes, that's gonna give it that. And it's because we're cooking it as a whole chicken with bone in.
Mm.
So that was that had bone.
And, keep it moist.
And we
keep it moist. Why? Because it has a little more space in there.
Yeah, so it's crispy outside and moist inside.
Mm. Exactly. So the skin and the bone, it's going to keep the inside more
now
moist.
Now, yours looks different to me. Is yours the same chicken or just in a different approach? Or
no, this is brother.
It's, well, and this one, it's the same. So what we did with...
Yeah, <didn't make>
What's that, either?
So we get one of those chicken,
slapping
one of those breasts,
and
that's how we shred it, and that's how we created your bowl. So it's made with the same whole chickens that we cook over the chicken.
I have never seen chicken that looks yellow, has a yellow. You're saying it's the marinade you put on it. So what, can we tell any of that? Is it
when you do it, you have to clap in your hands and get scared.
And it gets chicken. All right. The chicken gets chicken. No, we're not going to get it. So this is something you've marinated. So it's more than just chicken that you pulled out of the freezer and plopped on a grill. You marinated it for some time.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I have a little idea of the spice, but I'm not going to.
Do you think you know what it is? Can you tell when you taste other chefs? Because you say,
yes.
I kind of guess. Or sometimes you surprise and I wonder what that is.
Yeah, you can.
Sometimes there could be something that you know that it's something different. Maybe you can't exactly. Yeah, you'll remember, and then citrics. A lot of we use citric juice. We use.
I love that because first thing I do is put lime and squeeze lime on it. Yeah. I love the little citrus flavor, the little zing to it. Yeah,
exactly. Garlic, a lot of garlic. Our base is a lot of our food base is garlic.
Hispanic put citrus on it or not?
Not well. You know what? No, not to everything. No. And my mom was telling me that when they got this recipe, when they learned about it and all that, that she didn't know at that time, but she learned a few years ago that this seems to be like a Cuban recipe. Now I haven't tried grilled chicken.
Cuban,
but maybe
the relationship between Cuba and Spain, between Mexico and Spain.
Yes, exactly.
I like it.
Yep, I think that's
that pepper's got a kick to it. Ooh, that green pepper.
That jalapeno
with the seeds and everything.
Yep, exactly.
Well, I will tell you this: I would not. This is better than I thought it was going to be. And why? Because I thought, okay, fast or fast casual. It's a little mom-and-pop stand. It'll probably be good or a thing. But it won't. A lot of authentic stuff to me isn't that flavorful. It's okay. For example, Vietnamese food. I have friends that take me to these pho restaurants. And they say, can't you taste it? It's just kind of like chicken soup a little bit, you know. But they appreciate the subtle. Many French foods. Oh, my goodness, they do this reduction sauce over and over a million times. And at the end, it's so subtle, I can't taste it. You have to develop a flavor.
Okay, I have a chicken story for you.
Okay, please.
Of the crack there.
My point being, this has much more flavor to it. There's a lot of stuff.
A chicken fast food place.
Right.
And you ask for chicken nuggets.
Yeah, whatever that is, but yeah. I get it.
And suddenly, they have another type of nuggets, a creamy chicken nugget. So you have a choice.
Yes.
Okay.
So you ask the machine when you place your order, what's the difference? The machine won't answer. So you go to the pickup place, and you ask the server, the drive-thru, what's the difference between the creamy chicken and the chicken nuggets, or the creamy chicken tastes like chicken.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
We put some cream chicken on it here. No, this has much more. Somehow I think authentic foods, maybe I'm overthinking this, but they don't have as much bold flavor, as many strong flavors. At least maybe that's what everybody does, but...
We try to show a lot of our flavors. Yes, and then also one of the things that we do as well I try to let our customers know is that this is real kitchen, this is real food. Why a lot of times when someone says, maybe it was too overcooked or too this, it's because you can choose however you want it, one of the things. But the other thing is that even though when you're cooking on the grill with mesquite charcoal, it's never going to be the same and uniform in the whole grill. Yeah. Because we're cooking over 10-foot grills, 10 by 4.
So each time I come in, it might taste a little different slightly?
Maybe it could, just a little. And then even rice, same recipe, same everything. When you're doing everything there, when you have the recipe and you're preparing something, when it's real, not necessarily always going to turn out exactly the same.
Interesting. I like that idea.
Yes.
Which is the opposite of what you got to give the devil his due, the McDonald's of the world. It's exactly the same everywhere in the world.
Boom,
boom, boom, boom. You can have it in France or here.
A printing company.
A printing press, yeah.
Exactly. And I get it because a lot of times customers expect to have the same exact experience they had before or in 1,000 miles and then have it here. I understand that, but we got to be realistic.
But that's what makes you more homey.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
You know, I think I figured out why one of the things I'm tasting here that I don't taste in others, because your emphasis on fresh and cooking it yourself, and cutting it yourself and everything here. This is like a chicken I would get at at a fancier restaurant.
So I would say...
Does that make sense? Right.
You're becoming a mini chain right now. Mm-hmm. You're probably going to keep on expanding. But still, we can think that's a mom-and-pop restaurant. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yes. And that's what we try and we want to communicate that with our food to our customers. Also, when you lived in Mexico and you grew up there eating... this, a lot of times you don't find it here, so we want you to have that same experience.
You can call back to the store every 5 minutes. They're like, hey, we got another one, here we got another one.
So we want them to, when they come and visit a restaurant, that they can remember with the smell, because even coming into a restaurant, you smell. You smell the smoke, you smell the chicken. Mm-hmm. It smells, and we want it to smell like that. I understand some places they'll want to make sure that there's no food maybe smell in the restaurant, but in our case, that's one of the things we want to make sure that when you come in, how we treat you, how the ingredients
but
that you're eating.
You smell it, but doesn't smell strong enough so you carry it on your
correct.
Now, I was trying this just without the sauce. That sauce does have a kick to it, but that is very flavorful. What is this sauce?
The tomatillo one. I gave you the red tomatillo. That's
very flavorful, but yeah, it's got a kick to it.
Where does the red chili come from?
It's the chile de árbol, dry chile de árbol. I don't know why they call it the árbol, like from the tree, but it's that's the name of the chile, the árbol.
The árbol,
the dry chile, the árbol, it's a really thin red chili, like the Japanese or the that one. And then we will grill it over the flat grill. And then after it's grilled, then we'll blend it with the tomatillos and the garlic.
So when are you bringing it to the rest of Orange County? When's it coming to Irvine? When's it coming to
the rest of Orange County?
The rest of Orange County, not just these culinary.
Somebody's going to get the message today.
So the idea, it's hopefully we're always looking like for second generation restaurants to take over. If it's something that it's for sale and we're able to go in, we'll try to purchase the property
take over.
A lot of times it's not an option because maybe they're in a strip mall or in a mall, then we'll obviously take over their lease.
And also,
we still have to open Orange.
How about AQMD? Do you have trouble with anything open flames these days?
Yeah,
you got the air quality.
Exactly.
That's a problem.
Some city will not let you an open flame in the kitchen.
Exactly. So you know what? That's political thing, because if you pay for the permit, then you're okay burning whatever you're burning.
Right.
So
I know that because
we have the permits for AQMD, but if we pay for the permit, then we're okay to cook with open flame. Then realistically,
the
water
usually
really
freaks out if you try and take it out of the kitchen and cook it in the back, even though they do sometimes places.
Just turn off the fire when you have an inspection.
Yes. No, but. That's one of the things that has been harder right now. Like in these two new locations, with these two new locations, they have changed some of the rules exactly from the county and the state. Now with cooking with open flame, but requirements are it's heavier. The CFMs that you're putting in.
Well, even my fine dining restaurant, I was lucky enough to be still able because I was a father granted. An open flame grill.
Nice.
So I grilled my New York steak on it. Wow.
Awesome.
Unbelievable.
Yes.
The dripping, the kind of real smoke.
Exactly.
Make a big difference.
Yeah. It does.
But that's hard to get approved today. They don't want you to do that anymore.
Correct. It's much harder. So that's why.
If it's grandfathered from an existing kitchen.
So if it's an existing kitchen, then we do have to make some changes because obviously it wasn't made for
fire.
Exactly. The fire suppression system, also the exhaust.
The exhaust capture, you have to have all these scrubbers and everything on the roof.
It's so sad because you're not even allowed to have a restaurant with an outdoor kitchen.
No.
No, that's sad.
I remember because I had a much lesser than you guys. It was a sports bar, but it was a big one, Kelly McHugh's. Was there for 10 years in Mission Viejo, and every so often we'd have like St. Patrick's Day. So we'd go out into the parking lot, put tents all over the place. We'd get special permits, and cooking the food, even the simple stuff we cooked, hamburgers or whatever, outside on a grill, was a nightmare.
Yes, exactly. And it's a lot.
I could do it at the house next door. I could do it at the housing tract right next door. No problem, but. The cooking outside, they worry about flies, they worry about exhaust, they worry about a million things here.
And that's the thing that when it's something informal and when you want to formalize it and when you're opening your own restaurant, it's so hard. And right now it's even more expensive than before. Now what they're doing, it's creating like a big gap.
Yeah.
So you can't really open your own restaurant because it's so expensive and so hard. And that maybe, but then now they're allowing you to cook at your home.
Yeah.
And then there's new programs where you can cook at your home, and they say you can sell maybe maximum 50 plates per day.
Yeah,
but really, who's
really
taking care of that?
You had somebody in that does that, cooks out of their house, and
help getting a special permit. You know?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Yes, after getting a special permit, and I understand that, but now it's this big gap.
Yeah.
Now it's hard, and it's making maybe only the big guys keep expanding, and then the small guys make it even harder to grow.
You cannot cook dairy. You cannot. You know, they're very limited.
Yes.
And, so, tell us, how do we get to you? What's the best way to know all the information?
Please, this is a find. I'm going to go find this here.
Perfect, great. So go to El Pollo Norteño. Google El Pollo Norteño. You'll see our webpage. You'll find us on Instagram and Facebook
Norteño,
as well.
Norteño, can you say Norteño?
Yes, Norteño, exactly. Yeah, the N is
going
to be hard.
The non-Espanol, so it's like Northern, N-O-R-T-E-N-O.
Exactly, Norteño. El Pollo Norteño. Altogether, and you'll find us in YouTube, Facebook, Instagram. You'll
and
see
rattle
our
off
videos.
Quickly the six that you have. We're at cities here, and you got a couple in Santa Ana.
So two Santa Ana, Anaheim, Garden Grove, Lake Forest, and Corona.
And Corona. See, now that's more of the, now you're getting to suburbia. That's middle America suburbia, Corona kind of. I mean,
correct.
And Lake Forest to an extent. Yeah.
Yes, that's that one we opened it 2 years ago, and that's on right off Freeway 91 right before the 15. So we tried to get, we have a lot of customers. So because we've been 45 years, we had a lot of customers in the past that they lived here, and they moved out to Riverside, Corona, Paris, all here. So we would have a lot of customers coming on the weekends because they used to eat and buy from us, that they now they live far away, so we try to get closer. We have a lot of good customer base as well over there in Corona, and here the two new ones. So it's going to be Westminster and Costa Mesa, and hopefully we're always open to opportunities.
So Costa Mesa is such a fun the district. Yeah, there's lots of fun things around Costa Mesa, and lots of cool concepts and stuff here.
It's not just a shopping center.
No.
More than that.
It really is. That's a culinary place to be here.
Yeah.
And
completely
should we shout out to your wife also?
Yes,
please.
To Karina. She's my boss. Yeah. We both own the company. We have three kids. Our daughter Karina.
Any of the kids is going to take over, you think?
I hope so, but you know what? It's a tough business. We don't know. All three.
Don't tell them that. They will learn.
You know what? So Karina, our daughter, and then Alfonso, our son, we try to make it easy. We name him after us, right?
Yeah.
So Karina and Alfonso and then Alvaro, our youngest, all three have graduated from college. So they do their own stuff. She's an accountant. She's really intelligent. She does great. And then Alfonso, he's in marketing and data analytics. And then Alvaro, he's an engineer. They all work at our restaurants all the time since they could help us.
And
all
they're all
the way
bring
to high
skills
school.
That your parents didn't have when they opened this up.
Your kids sound like a corporate team. I mean,
yes,
they do,
they
right?
They can really build up your company.
They could do a great team. And then
one
hopefully
can build them, one can market them, and one can make sure they make money here.
Yeah. Yes, completely right. So hopefully they'll team up and
but
they'll take over.
You're already a good businessman. You have a vision. You stick to it, and
What would your dad say today if he could see? What do you think your dad would say today? Because for him, this was a big step to come up, and it sounds like he came from Mexico.
Yes, exactly.
Place here probably didn't have a lot of money, and this is about as far as he could dream. You've taken it much bigger, and the next generation may take it even bigger. What would he say? You think I'm sure he'd be proud, but would he be amazed? Would he be?
I think he would be proud of what we've done, and also what the possibilities and to see the big sets. It has a lot of future.
Yeah,
it has a lot of future. There's a lot of different arms and different ways that this can grow and do.
Well, Chef, one of the reasons I met you on the Hispanic show, and you joined the chamber, and I said to Chef, maybe this isn't your cup of tea. Maybe this you like fine dining and upper end.
It's a restaurant success story.
And that's what he said. Okay. And he said, truthfully, this is the future. This is where the growth is in the restaurant industry. Yeah. This is where the young chefs are going to be creating concepts. Maybe it's even smaller food trucks and other things and stuff. But this, the small thing, very ethnic, real fresh, real familiar. That's the future.
It may look like a chain, but it's a family operation.
Right. Exactly. And you said a lot of times, I think the word is real. It's real.
That's
it's
it.
Not always perfect, but it's real.
Talking about real, I know we're running out of time, but do you go back to Mexico sometimes?
Or to keep it real? Do you ever go back? And
Do you think sometimes when you see something, maybe I'm going to put that on the menu or change this from that?
Yes. And there's something that we've been trying right now, and then maybe we're going to be doing something new that we're going to start cooking over the grill to prepare the, like the al pastor, and now over the grill. That and some other two ideas that we're still working on and see if we bring up, like the bowls. It's not something that we brought from Mexico, but it's something that it was growing really popular here in California, maybe in the United States.
Right. Yes, so you don't do the al pastor from there?
No. Exactly. So now it is to start doing it over the grill.
Almost like a burger.
Yes.
I hope you'll come back in a year and tell us you've got 20 more opened and where this is going to another level.
Maybe, I'm a chef. If I go in your kitchen and say, can I make an al pastor slider?
Exactly. Yeah. I would love to have you at a restaurant.
Crema de queso.
We had somebody who now has a real upscale mezcal brand, one of us.
Oh, nice.
And they were in here, and he was talking about going back to Mexico, to that part of Mexico, whose name escapes me, where all the mezcal and tequila and stuff come from. Where is it?
Jalisco.
Jalisco. And so he said there, and he said, what's interesting to him is it's not just carrying on traditions. That's what he thought. People are experimenting. The new generations, even in the small towns, even in the other places, are experimenting. And he said, you go to places, bigger cities, Mexico City and stuff here, really cutting it. So the cuisine is not just stuck in time. Chef Pascal said, unfortunately, a little bit, sometimes he goes back to France and he feels like it's just museum cooking. They're trying to just keep it the same way it always was.
Yeah.
No, over here in Mexico, you're right, it's evolving a lot.
My foundation.
And there's a lot of new things that they're coming up, really nice.
Yes.
Really nice things and great flavors, and they're doing a lot of fusions.
Fusions. I think trend everywhere.
This is nice. I've never seen it.
This is new.
He's become a brand ambassador.
I'm the brand ambassador for that.
He's so excited.
Uh-huh. And with your cuisine, I don't think you have our liquor.
Beer and wine. Beer and only, wine. Yes. But I can try this at home with no problem.
Yeah. This is a very spectacular. Again, mezcal that used to be the cheap stuff is now seen as a super ultra premium product here.
Correct.
And part of it is because they do the way they cook it and the way slow cook it and do all the things that traditionally made it so smoky and different flavor. And you've got a smoky food.
Exactly.
This is a smoky product.
Yes.
Well, if you want to try a little bit.
Well, all right. Now we're going to sit here all afternoon here. You get him a bottle. That's my only one I have here. You can get a bottle.
Right,
but let him try it. Let's taste it. It's quite something. Something here.
Let's pour. There you go.
He's going to pour it into... Here, you're going to pour it into something.
He has
nice
that little smokiness.
Here.
Oh, you have a little shot.
Whatever they call those things, that's the authentic way to drink it. We'll get his impression of it. I was blown away, but I don't know much about mezcal.
No, it's great. The flavor is awesome.
Amazing.
The flavor is awesome. The smokiness as well. Obviously, mezcal, that's how it's supposed to be, but it's a really good.
And there's something about the plant they use and some other things.
Check
here.
It out, because actually the founder is a movie producer.
Oh,
He's Mexican heritage, and movie industry slowed down, and he came up with this vision to try to bring back his childhood memories of this, but in a really upscale fashion with the bottle and everything else. And
You two should meet.
Yeah, he makes a music video. He's won Grammys and stuff videos and stuff here.
It's a gorgeous bottle. So you're an ambassador. Nice.
Now he picked up the brand. Now he's an ambassador here. So maybe he'll be an ambassador for
Mexican steelhead. Someone steelhead farm.
Oh, that's another one he's doing.
Oh. Bombay.
He's got a friend that's now growing steelhead trout salmon in Baja, and he takes it around and cooks it as acting as ambassador.
If you want
to
put salmon on your menu, let me know.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Mexican salmon.
That would be great. Once I had Wing, so I know Wing also from Oahu, so once he came, we met at my restaurant, and he brought some fish, and we cooked it over our grills.
Good.
Well, he's big friends with Wing and Wing's brother, Ed Lee. Yeah,
nice.
He's big friends with
nice. I don't know. I haven't had the pleasure to meet Ed, but hopefully I'll meet him one day. But we cooked some of his fish on our grill. It had great flavor. It was awesome.
You know, their original fish tackle, it's really, really good.
Oh, yes. It is. They have really good.
Well, I got to cut you guys off because you're going for hours here. Thanks so much. What's the name of the brand again, and how do we find you?
El Pollo Norteño. You can also call 1-866-MI-POLLO.
Mi pollo. Yeah. Mi pollo. Okay, that makes sense. Am I pollo? Like
exactly. In Spanish, pollo. Like in Spanish, am I pollo?
My pollo.
1-866, right. Mi pollo.
Thanks for joining us here today much. As we examine what's cooking here in Orange County with the man who knows, Chef Pascal. Right here in Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio, streaming live from our studios here at the University of California, Irvine's Beal Applied Innovation Center.